right. That was us. Damien, Chris and Damien. So now we're back.
Yes, this is us. That was us. This is us.
We are months here and worlds separated from where we were last.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. You're the one who's...
Well, I was going to say, I think you might... You said, though, you've recorded in a slightly different area of your place than you record normally, right?
It's true. Yeah, it is. I'm trying to test out some new... seeing the feng shui of different locations and seeing what it does for the content.
Well, now we are back, of course. And, yeah, first of all, thank you, everyone for, supporting this show and listening. Everyone I met, you know, I met people that listen to Footnotes, Chris, even at wrestling, far removed from the world of punk.
I would be lying if I didn't also say that I've had, and you know, a lot of the people I was encountering, especially over the last week or weekend specifically, because there was a festival in Toronto that I go to every year.
You can name the festival.
Yeah, I did get
the show.
Well, whatever. Not dead yet. Every year in Toronto, I was at. So, and I did run into many people there who did bring it up to me too, and so it's, you know. Yeah, it's funny, and we've gotten some communication. I guess we should sort of make sure to highlight that is we did have a few people write in and kind of inquire as to like not like what was going on, but almost like the tone was like a mild fear that it would never like happen again or something. Yeah. I was never in fear of that. I knew you were very busy, and I figured even if it took even longer, I would imagine that eventually we would have done something. So just, you know, obviously these people will be listening, but, you know, just to set them at ease, yeah, it's not, it was just a matter of scheduling and that was about it.
Yeah, it was very hard for kind of the past few months just to kind of pin down any time to record anything I found. So unfortunately, you know, Chris also, you know, like started a new job and was kind of like, busy too, right? So it was hard, but I think we're gonna figure out a way to get back on track now that I'm around a little bit more, and we will definitely hopefully get this back on schedule because I missed recording it, buddy.
Yeah, it's fun. What I notice more than anything is in the absence, because it was about 2 months or maybe even a little more technically, it's been 2 months I figured since we last recorded. But I think like the overall span was probably closer to 3, maybe even a little more. So when you look at seeing the things that unfold, you know, in our absence, which I'm sure we'll get to, you know, that immediately when I saw that, I thought, oh man, it's like a big, you know, I'd be discussing. Just anything like that. It's just funny how, yeah, like when you deal with these things weekly and then it's not, you just think like there's a noticeable absence, which I had never foreseen previous to doing this.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the problem is like, you know, like we grow so accustomed to be able to process all these topics that, you know, I don't know about you, but I have very few people in my life that I can unload about these episodes with, you know, like,
yeah,
certainly not the people on the My Film crew.
Yeah. I think though it's, you know, it's our voice on this, and I'm not trying to, you know, honk our own horn or whatever, but like, it's just, yeah, it's for people like us. So if you don't have a lot of these people in your life, then yeah, this is where it comes out. And I don't immediately that much. I've been fortunate that you've been away working mostly. So I'm still at least kind of going around and I do get these conversations every now and again, I'm with you. Long story short.
Yeah, like once in a while I'll run into someone on the road where I can kind of like have one of these decompression sessions, but you know, those are few and far between. You know, not that there's aren't people in my crew that also enjoy like punk music and punk adjacent music, but you know, not in the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and trust me, I try and force these conversations on them.
As someone who knows you, yes, I believe that.
All right, let's get on to more of these episodes, because we've got some like real hitters that we missed out on talking about, starting with Jello Biafra. We didn't get to talk about last time. Jello is, of course, the singer of the Dead Kennedys. Some of you may have heard of that band. And also the Guantanamo School of Medicine more recently, and Lard. And what were some of the other – he had other projects too.
One was like the No WTO thing that was probably like about 15 years ago. That was with Chris Novoselic was even in that, and I can't remember the whole lineup.
Yeah, who was in that?
He's done
the first thing we got to look up.
Yeah, we'll get it right into our nerdiness right out of the gates on this one. But what was the other one? He did he's done like lots of collaborations, obviously, with like No Means No and DOA. And
yeah, he did those
even
things.
Mojo Nixon. Yeah, Melvin's one, exactly, yep. Which I actually forgot about until you just said that. But yeah, that's a good, pretty prolific, obviously. That's, if anyone doesn't know that, I'd be shocked. But, it's worth delving into his catalog more even than just the Dead Kennedys. There's some really interesting things. I think, for a time, I would argue that his spoken word records were, a very... I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but in my formative years, at least, they were one of the things that was the, at the beginning you get into, the title I Blow Minds for a Living. I remember being like very, very profound and listening to some of those when, especially being young and being like moved. So I think for formative punkers, if you've not gone back and listened, I don't know how much of those are sort of dated by their decades now, but I still think they're worth checking out for something he's just knows. But yeah, that's what we're looking up. We're looking up who's in the No WTO thing.
Yeah, it was Kim
Thayil. That band.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Kim. Wow. Okay.
And then Gina Mainwall, who is the drummer in Sweet 75. I was just wanting to see if she was in.
I don't know. Bands.
I was thinking she, what other band she played in, but it's not on her Wikipedia. She's a filmmaker as well, but played drums in that. Sweet 75 was that Chris Novoselic band he had. It was like his Foo Fighters era project.
Yeah, I do recall. This is about what the WTO thing was like 2000. I want to say maybe 2001.
No, 99.
If that, I don't know, maybe, or 99, there we go, yeah. See, and they play, showing my age now.
They played that one show, because it was in the curfew zone.
Live in the Battle in Seattle, yeah, from 2000. I'm trying to find the lineup here, too, yeah. Yeah, either way, interesting little... it's just something like that gets brought up. I don't know. Like I have this, still, I'd be lying if I said, listen to it in a good while, but I do remember thinking it was decent. And, again, this is one of the many treasures you can unlock by following the Jello, path over the years.
You're right about a spoken word, like records. Like it's funny how they haven't aged. Not well, like because they're the as far as the content goes, but it's not like people like look back on them in the way that you think they should or would, like we kind of like, there's the history of cannabis, like that they obviously had a massive impact on, but just like so many things that he talked about have kind of come to fruition, and like he kind of like was an entertaining guy and was almost like if there were like a shock jock equivalent on the left, it would be him.
Yeah. I think that's well stated. Like when I think of like early, formative sort of punk things, and especially like in say like even the, like specifically, I guess late eighties, like even early 90s, the things I remember that like sort of, always the go-tos was just like, even beyond the spoken word stuff, the fact that he ran for, what was it, mayor of San Francisco?
Yeah, mayor.
which is like, you know, and you can now, I'm sure you could easily Google that. But I remember even when just seeing the, his like, whatever, his like, his propaganda material for doing it is really amusing. And just like he, you know, he's a larger than life figure. And in that, in those decades specifically, I think he was pretty loomed very large. Not that he's not as much anymore. His influence is still very, you know, profound. But yeah, I don't know. In those years, like those
spoken word artists, like he never really like, you know, he was like kind of doing that. You know, it's become so popular in the world of wrestling to have like wrestlers go out and do these kind of like nights with spoken word type things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's definitely obviously a huge thing for stand-up comedians. And it's almost like Jell-O, you'd think, would be on a much higher level at this point in that world.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the comparison I make is always the, and not that they're remotely the same person, but just, you know, they come from the world of punk and they do this too and all that. And it's like Rollins' profile doing this seems to be a lot bigger for whatever bizarre reason. I don't know. But, and again, that's an formative year kind of thing, like that kind of stuff too, as a reference point. But yeah, I think for me, I think though, Jell-O just, it was dedicated a lot more to sort of like a political stance, even though he is entertaining. I think that's what it is. Like, you know, again, the last things I vividly remember of his spoken word stuff, which are, you know, obviously dated now, but date back to that WTO stuff, the last, unless he's done a new spoken word thing that I'm not aware of since, which could be, but the last one I have was from that era too. Actually, I should look up what the record's called. It's actually a really cool looking record too. It's like, I believe it's like double picture disc and the whole like layout is insane. It has all these like newspaper like cutouts and stuff, but it's from that era of like, you know, the WTO and like maybe just pre-Seattle specifically. I'm just trying to find it here.
It's funny because I saw him do, we went on that cruise, right? Like Fucked Up did the Bruise Cruise a couple years ago now.
Yeah.
And he was on it and he did like lectures on the boat and it was like one of the coolest. It was awesome. It was just like he did like little like lectures in these classrooms on this boat and also ended up investigating kind of the labor situation on the boat and bumming everyone out by letting us in. On the it was like a super kind of shitty situation for all the employees on the boat.
Oh boy.
Yeah. But he did these like spoken word things that were all fantastic. Like these every night he would kind of like, you know, kind of do one of these things and they were great. And it was one of those things where, yeah, like it was 2008, I guess, which is around the time that he did his last spoken word record.
Yeah. So it shows, like, I found what I was speaking of and it goes to show you how outdated I am on this. Cause the last one I have is from 98. So it's definitely pre WTO, but it's the, If Evolution Is Outlawed, Only Outlaws Will Evolve. And it's excellent from what I remember. Still own it. Looks great too. But yeah, it's like a 3 LP, like picture disc and like a whole crazy thing. But, you know, one of the things on it is like the murder of Mumia Abu-Jamal is one of the topics, mm-hmm. You know, so that'll tell you the era as well. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't mean to, you know, rant too hard on this. I just think like for me, maybe it's our age collectively or my age. I just think that there was a time when these were like fundamental backbones to getting into stuff.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. At least from my perspective. Absolutely. And I don't know, I'm not trying to like throw any shade. I don't know if that is such the case anymore and, you know, for better or worse, but, I would still recommend people go back and visit because there's some real treasure in those I find.
Yeah, absolutely. And one passing we haven't talked about yet, but it's Gord Downie. And my friend Patrick was talking to me about it the other day. And he's like talking about it's like the last generation of like poets and how there's like not really another wave of like, you know, obviously there's other poets, but like as far as like people that could kind of like trade on being just a thinker or just like a poet, you know, like that doesn't really exist anymore. You can't just be,
I think,
just the lead singer in a band. You got to like have some other hustle now.
I think you're not off in you know, like giving credit where it's due to what, you know, what he was like as a human being. Is from what I mean, I didn't know him personally, but you did a little bit, and I know other people that did. And yeah, I think there's something in an era of people like that that I do agree with you. It doesn't feel like, and again, perhaps I'm being cautious about, you know, our collective era, but I just, yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I think Gord's is a weird, not a weird one, a unique one, in the sense that for me, his, I was talking with someone about this the other day, obviously, because it's a big, it's been a big, you know, deal here in Canada, as it should be, his passing. But the thing I always thought was interesting with him, and even like his collaborations recently with like folks like you or what have you, it's rare that you get someone who can be like completely populist while at the same time, you know, not being, at the same time being completely rooted in that other world and being, and universally respected in both worlds. And so that is why I think, you know, his passing resonates, apart from the group he was a part of, obviously being iconic here in Canada, especially. But, you know, when anyone speaks of him, of course, apart from like he was a nice man and things like that, it's not like people aren't sending these compliments as like, you know, being a politician. It's that, you know, people, you know, really believed it or felt it. That's, and again, I never got to meet him, unfortunately, so I don't have a personal story on this, but yeah, that's what I think translates. And I think like, yeah, you're the archetype of that kind of guy or person, I should say, is very rare. And I don't know if it's difficult to source one since. I mean, there's a few people I would, but even them, I wouldn't put in the same category, like in Canada anyway. But anyway, I don't know. I'm ranting. But yeah, I do think that's a good observation.
Yeah, and I think Jello, like, you know, people be like, Jello, and what does Jello have to do with Gord Downie? I think both of them are very much symbolic of an era where, you know, as a musician, you were able to sell enough physical products that you could just be a full-time musician and kind of exist outside of the society, you know? Like, you could almost opt out, right? Like, and I think Greg Ginn, someone who was able to do, to illustrate someone who's done that. You know, like, because,
well, I think I think the punk world's full of those people. I agree. Yep.
Yeah. And it was because you were able to sell enough physical product at that time that you could be independently wealthy, like, and completely independently wealthy, you know? And I think, you know, Gord Downie also is from a time when a band could sell enough CDs and records, and they, granted, they did some sponsorship type thing too, but like, you could be wealthy off music. And yeah, it's not, we don't live in that era anymore. Like, you can be wealthy off music, but it's because you're doing something else, like touring incessantly, or, you know, getting sponsorship money is a big one now, or, you know, like,
things, yeah,
like
that. And I think more importantly though, what we're attributing here also is that, you know, the people you think of as wealthy off music in a contemporary context, I'm struggling to think of any of them that represent anything beyond, you know, vapid pop culture. And neither of the people we're speaking of are that type of person. And that's what's rare. And the other, you know, you could name a dozen other people as well. And I think that is what, when we reminisce about, you know, things in the 80s or even 90s or this kind of world, or at least when I do, this is like, this is what I'm sort of, you know, dreaming of, that, you know, that hearkening back to that. Now, having said that, yeah, there's a lot of people I haven't been the biggest of that were also popular and wealthy in that time and had plenty of, what's the word? Like, they were not in the news, but they were as high profile, and, you know, that probably has changed because it's made it more of a, I don't know, even playing field now. So you don't get it off of like being a high profile, you know, necessarily wealthy person or something. You now get it off of, you know, the weight of what's, you know, happening in the minute. And so,
yeah,
I think, and I think like you guys have brushed with that, I would say, as a group, and even you as a person. And I think like that, in your era, in our era, I think that's been important, because I'm not sure that would have happened for you guys in the past, let's say. You know, so there's the give and take to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think we're definitely, like, our success would not have happened in any other era of music, you know, and I understand that and appreciate that. And, like, you know, but there's definitely, like, the fact that, you know, in other eras of music, you know, not talking about myself, because obviously I'm very appreciative of the success and ride I've had. But in other eras of music, you could be a singer in a band and just exist like that for a long time, you know? And like some people would argue, you know, I'm sure from a Dead Kennedys other members standpoint when it comes to Jello and have some qualms about how the royalties were divided up for that thing. But like the fact is Alternative Tentacles was an amazing label and was putting out a lot of really cool records that were all selling pretty good. And so you could become wealthy off that. Fat Mike was wealthy off of punk records, you know? And
yeah, like, well, a number of people have been, yeah.
Yeah, and there were, like, you know, other musicians that were wealthy off their music. Like, it's funny, we're not going to get to this episode today, but the Brandon Kelly one where he's talking about making so much money off Slapstick records because they were selling just so many CDs at an era where, like, CDs were selling, and you could sell them for a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, we've touched on this before, and again, like, I hesitate a bit when we talk about some of this stuff sometimes, because again, I feel maybe we're being a bit precious about, like, the physical product era, and you and I happen to be shameless record collectors as well, so, you know, obviously we have a different relationship with the physical product than most people.
What also, here's, like, another argument, though, like, okay, like, you know, you're just fleecing people for their money, you know, like, these guys were rich off of the work other people did, you know, like that other people would have these jobs that they had to do. And it was to like feed this need to hear, you know, people, you know, extolling their own virtues on music, on record. And I say this as someone who made my living doing that too. So it's really, it's like, you know, I don't know if I'm necessarily nostalgic for that era in the same way as I am when I don't think about this kind of stuff. But like, you know, like these people, like it's, you know, it's like pro wrestling, Chris. It's all, it's all about just getting people's money.
Well, and the, you know, the industry independent or not, of course, that's what it's like, you know, that's the way of the world.
Yeah.
But, I do think, like some of the people we're discussing, though, you know, regardless of sort of what has become of their empires in certain respects, I do think their intentions were sound, you know. So I think that's where I would differ on the idea of it being completely opportunistic. I don't think that was always the case, but
yeah, no, I'm just being playing devil's advocate a little bit on this one too.
No, for sure, and I think, you know, in the era. Has also, or like the air, like the changing of the industry and that whole, you know, what we're already touching on, I think people have to become a little more like that, perhaps, because, you know, again, there's the sustainability was not the same anymore, or is not the same, so to speak. Yeah, I don't know. We're getting into a large topic here. I didn't expect to be chewing this one off, but
I tell you, that's where this
is. We're back. This is footnotes, folks.
This is footnotes. It gets heavy sometimes.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
Dig in. Do a dab. Drink a soda. Because it's going to be a long night. But yeah, no.
Mine was the soda? Yours the dab?
Yours the soda. Yeah. Might as well go for a soda, Chris.
I was just clarifying that was the... There we go. Speaking of another Canadian icon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Another straight edge icon. I'm on the phone with a Canadian straight edge icon, and we're quoting a Canadian straight edge icon in Kim Mitchell. I don't know if he's actually straight edge, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't believe so, but
oh, you know,
we'll take that song. I'll have that.
You know, we didn't get into, like, you know, our normal talk about stuff we bought recently, but this store opened up down the street from my house, and I bought a sealed box of Dinosaur Attack cards.
I believe we've spoken a bit about this. I don't know if we were trying to play up that we had, and I'm sorry I ruined that. But
we've spoken off air about this, but I know, but I haven't spoken on air about stuff we bought recently. So,
I know.
Awkwardly transitioning into my still need for physical product out of our conversation about that was getting too heavy.
No, but the when you first brought this up, when we talked in private, I was just kind of like, it went over my head. I was like, oh yeah, I don't really, didn't recall it. And then you started describing it, and I immediately remember, vividly remembered as like a youth. Yeah, and they're great and terrible, and it's fantastic. And so that is wonderful, and I can't wait to I need to look up and see some of the images again, because I just remember as a kid stumbling across them, just being like blown away at how why does this exist?
Yeah, they're very vivid in their disgustingness.
Yeah.
Also, I went to Vinyl Conflict, I should say. So shout out to Bobby and Vinyl Conflict.
Yeah.
And picked up some cool stuff down there.
I still have to go. I believe we spoke about this on the show, but when we did the live ones in December, he came out and gave us gifts. He's a wonderful man. I just think the store looks really cool. I always am envious of people that go. So when I saw you went again, I was very, very envious of that.
I got some good
but chances. I haven't been to Richmond in a while, unfortunately. I need to try and rectify that, but it's a little difficult when you're not really touring in a band or with a band
at the minute. You got to start a new band.
To really kind of I'm not sure I need to do that, but yeah.
This is your R war.
I wish.
It's like your R war year band.
What's that?
Maybe I'll go second round straight edge and sing in it, and it'll be like we'll do our band.
There we go. Hey, let's do it. We just have to recruit some other people. We got to figure out who that would be.
We do have to figure out some people, or maybe it'll be like a straight edge weed band, and it'll be like kind of like.
I think I'm already out. The idea has already expired. That quickly.
What if I brought up Uppercut? Would that bring you back on board?
No, not so much. But
that's your loss then. But yeah, Jello Biafra.
Yes. And
I think, it was a fun getting to talk to Jello, a guy that I got to take record shopping afterwards, which turned into another episode worth of adventures. I brought him record shopping with Bear from A Tribe Called Red to Grasshopper's store.
Yeah, that one I remember mentioning. There was a lot of stuff you get into in that episode, and I feel like because we have to kind of cover three or four of the ones that we've sort of not covered in real time.
We should move through them a little faster.
Well, no, I just mean I feel bad that to the people that want the nuance that we usually provide, that we're not getting to every little nook and cranny of that one, because
is there more to get into, you think, or should we?
The one thing I wanted to shout out was I liked that he the Paul Revere and the Raiders. I love that he shouted out that and them not getting enough credit. I thought that was big, and I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the other ones that jumped out at me that he was talking about as far as this, as far as the, that kind of stuff. If any jump out at you, I don't know, do you remember anything in the moment you being impressed by him bringing up, or you mentioning that he was receptive to?
I love the idea of him being the roadie for the Ravers. I love his stories about just walking in and seeing these bands, and the idea that he was exposed to it firsthand. And he's always had a really incredible ear for punk. If you kind of go back through the bands that he signed, or just the bands he's always been into and repped, it's always been great stuff. And I really enjoyed the idea of him record collecting, and him as a record collector, because he's a record collecting hero of mine. And the fact that he's always, he's always been into all types of music, but he's certainly had this ear for rare punk records that goes back to before there was such a thing as rare punk records, when it was just random singles that no one cared about that he would somehow get into.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah. I agree, and I think that he doesn't get enough credit for that personally. Nope. I don't feel either. And
let's call up Alternative Tentacles on the cogs. And like you look,
yo, at there's that, a lot.
Oh, it's like insane. But like you go through like some of those records that they've put out, it's like this is a good label.
Well, the things in like recent whatever years that I think are underrated, because I think a lot of the times they tend to do like CD reissues of things. But I remember I was looking up a few recently. I'm just trying to remember the ones that were jumping out, because I wasn't aware that he had reissued some of this stuff until I was like, because it's like always the, like I believed, I'm trying to find it without making an error here. But he did do the Subhumans reissue, did he not? Of all the original Subhuman stuff?
More recently, yeah.
Canadian? Yeah. But I mean, just even that. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, there's a bunch there. But there was a few things that I remember crossing recently, like coming across going, oh, he actually did this too? Because I always just remember the original records, like, because I'm a nerd trying to track that stuff down, but then realizing like, oh wait, he did an actual thing. Like the Zolar X talk too. Like the fact that he put
a Zolar X record. That was one of his discoveries, but no, he did like DOA. He did Giza X records. He did like Six Pack came out Alternative Tentacles. Flippers record came out Alternative Tentacles. TSOL, you know, Bad Brains. The first 12 inch came out Alternative Tentacles, like Not So Quiet.
Yeah, Western, which is nuts. Yep.
For 7 seconds, farts, you know, like.
Yeah, that.
Go on, sorry.
No, that, like, it's funny that those ones you're mentioning specifically are the ones that are kind of the mind blowers for me. When you think of, like, that idea, like, 7 seconds and, like, the Bad Brains 12 inch. Like,
yeah.
Like, I know, realize that those are in the same, obviously, arena, but they're. It just. Associated with that label, it's just not things you think of, especially in hindsight. Like when you think of those two groups, you don't think, or I don't think of any association with Alternative Tentacles, yet there is.
Well, yeah, like Husker Du, Landspeed record. That's on Alternative Tentacles.
Yep.
MDC.
Yep, I agree.
The MDC LP when it gets reissued. Yo, how about this? The Naked Lunch, Naked Lunch, the Eraserhead soundtrack.
He did that too?
Yeah.
Weird.
In 82.
I didn't even know that one. Well, he did the Articles of Faith, like, reissues, too, of the collections he did.
Flex Your Head, it's Comp. Nuts.
Yeah, that's right. And it's the best cover for those nerds out there.
Yeah.
The original, it's the best cover of that. Mind you, it's been reissued by Discord since. But originally, the only cover you could get like that was their version, which is a huge nerd factoid.
It was the UK version,
that, of course,
right?
I went out of my way to get. Yeah. It's the black X cover rather than the red one that was reissued. Yeah. One record I want to shout out, because I think that this is a group that for some reason, in my opinion, has been completely lost to time from the early 2000s, and they were incredible live and had a great shtick, was the Causeway, and he also did those records. Not every one, but he did, I think, the last two LPs they did. One's called With Loving and Open Arms. What's that? Sorry?
Oh, sorry. And Wesley, I'm sorry. I was just talking from that era too. Wesley Willis too. He was doing.
He did do. Yeah. He did Wesley Willis. Yep. Some of Wesley. I mean, Wesley Willis did a lot of stuff. Some of it. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I cannot talk highly enough about this.
Amoebics. No Means No. Like he did. He put out some.
He also did Late SNFU, like pre whatever Ping Pong EP came out. So he's got his hands all over everything.
Yeah, like it's amazing, what a run he had of just like essential records.
Yep. And again, it's one of those things where I haven't heard them all, but there's a lot that I have heard that I really enjoy. And of course, there's a lot of good spoken word records that are reissued and stuff or put out. Anyway, yeah. So endless credit due. And I don't know. I think your interview was really great. I very much enjoyed listening to it.
Oh, well, no, thank you. I appreciate that. Like, it was a real honor. And so, Melanie Kay, thank you once again for being the best and making that happen, because she was the one that made that interview happen. And also, guys, give a huge shout out to Cops on Queen Street and Grasshopper Records for letting Jello and I invade the store and to deal with the shitstorm of two people digging for records. Some more frantically than others. Not saying which one, just saying.
Nice.
So I guess we should move on to the next episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Dave Perner from the band Soul Asylum. So I guess, like, you know, before we get into this too much, we got to talk about another recent passing, right?
Yeah, sure. Like that, I mean, it was one of the, I would say probably the biggest one, I think, as far as punk-centric, punk-centric news of that kind. I can't think of any, and I feel, I'm always worried that I say something like that and I've forgotten a huge one, you know, but pretty sure that one is the big one.
Yeah, like for me, obviously, you know, and I we glossed over it a little bit there, but Gord, you know, the passing of Gord Downie is like an unbelievable tragedy for Canadian music. And to say that it's like we've lost one of the good ones, as people always like to say, is an understatement. Like, I say we've lost one of the few decent ones that existed in music that I've ever met. And so, yeah, rest in peace, Gord. But also, yeah, I know someone that I never got to meet, but someone I'm definitely a huge fan of, an unbelievable songwriter, one of the greatest songwriters, I think, of, I don't know, any generation, to be honest, but Grant Hart from Husker Du and a very impressive solo career passed away a few months ago now, or a month ago now, I should say.
Yeah, I would say around there. I'll look it up as we're, yep.
And he is, without a doubt, you know, yeah, September 13th, he passed away on. He is, without a doubt, as I say, one of the greatest songwriters ever. And I can't tell you to check out his music with more haste than if you haven't before, because, you know, he's someone that left behind a breadth of material, you know, an incredible discography.
Yeah, and
one of the coolest labels too.
Yeah, and also just like a sidebar. Are an amazing drummer,
yeah,
an amazing punk drummer, which is big. You remember the really excellent punk drummers from what I, at least I do. So yeah, that one, yeah. Anyway, but that was one we missed, unfortunately, in real time when that happened. But the I think that from the amount of things I saw paying tribute to him, I think it was at least well. Observed, you know what I mean, like paying due to that, which is nice to see.
Yeah, like I don't think he gets the credit he deserves sometimes as a songwriter, and I think that in his the wake of his passing, I think he got it a lot more.
Mm-hmm. I thought you had because I know when you went on stage with them, what was that as?
That was just Bob Mould.
It was just his solo thing. So he was, I don't know why I thought it was like a reunion-y thing or something. No. Anyway, yeah.
No, it just brought back the power of Husker Du for you, Chris. That's what I think you're thinking of. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. my brother awkward.
I'm shocked though that you never met him, because you've been fortunate enough to kind of have these encounters. I'm shocked that you never.
I was at a show he played, but I missed his set that Halo Flies did too, for Infemity Reptile at a South by Southwest event years ago. But yeah, like unfortunately, I never got to meet him. Someone that I'm definitely a huge fan of his music, like, you know, put out tons of incredible solo records, an incredible drummer, wrote some unbelievable songs for Husker Du. And, someone that we missed, but definitely someone that we needed to acknowledge before we dive into this Dave Perner episode, because we do talk about Husker Du, so we had to get that out of the way before another awkward memoriam in the middle of a conversation about something else.
Yeah.
But, yeah, rest in peace, Grant. And once again, if you have not checked out any of their music, you got to check it out. There's a Numero group, Husker Du Early Years Box Set, coming out.
Really? I never knew that.
Yeah. We gotta look that up.
Numero Group is you know, I don't know. Do they just crush it, man? I really like that. I believe we've talked about it on the show before. But I just bought one of their things recently that this bizarre reissue thing that they put out. Not even a reissue. I don't know what you would even call it. Kind of like a weird, like, you know, I don't know, Back from the Grave or like Killed by Death style comp of like acid rock.
Oh, Acid Nightmares. I don't know if,
yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Really. As a sidebar, not, I know it's not topical to what we're discussing for Minneapolis, but I just say, yeah, like that label a lot. I have for a while, but that, you know, just the fact that they still do that kind of stuff is excellent. I had no idea they were doing a Husker Du one, though. That's awesome.
Yeah, this is like, it's crazy. They're doing this box set thing. It's four LPs, and it comes with a book, 69 songs, 47 previously unissued. And it's got all these unpublished photos in it and essays.
So what are they like? What are you're saying early years. So it's just like the early records compiled or, you know, like what?
What is this? Follow the Huskers to their earliest gigs in 1979 through extensive road tour, dog touring, and the start of their partnership with West Coast tastemaker SST in 1983 via 180-pound book, blah, blah, blah. Spread across four LPs, 47 of 69 songs compiled here are previously unissued, and includes In a Free Land, Everything Falls Apart, and an alternate Land Speed record.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I was just wondering, because I didn't know if they, like, obviously those records exist, if they were actually using the material from that. I thought but the band must have the rights to that music or whatever still.
No, they also just put an Extra Circus, which is...
That's Numero Group did, yeah?
Yeah.
What is that? I don't know that one.
Oh, it looks awesome. It's just one LP. Oh, it's all the songs that were left on the cutting room floor from when they did Metal Circus.
Oh, cool.
That have just been on bootlegs, but they're all like legit reissues.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Man, this is a great label. Yeah, it is. They definitely put out a lot of cool, really cool stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, so, but, oh, and that's it. I guess let's get into this episode.
Yeah, what one did you want to talk to first? What point here?
Let's go into, I guess, the idea of seeing punk before there was any other, like, signpost for what punk was to you. You know, and, like, the idea of, like, being, like, able to see something completely pure without any formal introduction to it.
Yeah, I think obviously it tends to be like that eureka moment when that happens, at least for the people that you've interviewed or even, you know, yourself, me. But I think we had a context before, you know, whereas this generation didn't, or whatever, not didn't have a context, but didn't have like a, I don't know what the word is, exactly what you're saying. Like it wasn't a certifiable thing by term. Therefore, you know, you didn't already go in with some expectation. Mm-hmm. I wish I lived in an era where that were possible. I don't know if even there was any music that I could ever say I've encountered as purely, because I think everything had already been a thing by the time I saw anything, including up to present. So yeah, I love the idea of it. And of course, punk in specific, you know, it's, you know, experiencing that first time, it's, you know, it's a pretty unique thing. Especially for a young person, I wish I had that luxury. I don't know. I all the time I think about that. Like I wish, you know, I was like an era earlier or something. Actually, I don't even know if that would have been early enough. It would have had to be two for me and you probably. But you know,
yeah, no, it would have to have been because it's like, you know, like there, you know, and there are obviously people would be like, I think actually no, pre Nirvana. Like that would be a way to still hear stuff in a way that would be pure, right? So I guess maybe I did hear the Ramones in a kind of like pure way when I probably first heard them. because it would have been as a little kid, you know, but
yeah,
I think post Nirvana, you can't really do that because you're hearing bands that are inspired by them being played on mainstream radio, right? Like, so when you hear them, it's not going to be nearly as shocking.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think of a release. Yeah, I think that's correct. I think I think that's a good way to frame it. I can't think of a, I mean, I liked metal before I liked, I guess, punk in theory. So I'm just trying to think if there was anything that was adjacent or something that I could point to pre-Nirvana. But yeah, I think in many ways you're right with that. I think it, what is a bummer to me now is that, you know, just due to age, that I didn't see a lot of the groups that were contemporaries of Nirvana in that era, that I could have, you know, sort of gained a little more context to, you know, that whole thing when it unfolded. But yeah, seeing, I can't even imagine when like people of like, you know, two generations, like I said, above us, saw the phenomenal things they saw without any, you know, like, you know, any preconception. I can't even imagine what that would be like, being blown away that badly. Not to say that I didn't see, you know, earlier concerts or have earlier records in my youth that did do that, but to see it so, like, I don't know, like to see any of the classic stuff, I never even saw Nirvana. You know, I had an opportunity, but again, like most things in life, or the Ramones for that matter, you know, most things, I was actually having this discussion on the weekend, like the Ramones, I just always assumed would be like, oh, they'll be back. I'll catch them with, you know, someone else at another time. And then of course, you know, that things happen. And Nirvana, same thing. I remember that last tour in 93. And I thought, okay, well, they were huge. And I thought, well, I'll get another chance. So I'll see them, you know, no worries. And then of course that changed. And so, yeah, I don't think I saw live any of my like sort of early profound things, like, cause even the metal stuff, I never went to see any of those big metal concerts. I never thought of this before, that the idea of like catching any of things like that live, I don't think I saw anything like that until, good Lord, I don't know. I don't think I experienced that because I was already into music, like collecting music in some tiny respect, that, you know, the sort of the live thing was secondary. I just didn't go to a lot of concerts. So yeah, to see it, you know, quantified and like, I wish I had it. I wish my mind hadn't been blown by records as much as it had been by seeing a group. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree.
I don't know if I feel like I rambled a bit there, but you know, I'm trying to articulate that thought, but
I never got to see most of the great bands. Like I never got to see, you know, like from my era, I mean, like the ones you're bringing up, you know, I never got to see the Ramones cause the same sort of reason. Last time they came through, it was opening for White Zombie.
Yeah. And I remember. Yeah. Like,
I don't want to really see White Zombie.
Yeah.
Though now I wouldn't have mind seeing White Zombie then.
You know, I think you're wrong though. I don't think it was White Zombie. I think it was Rob Zombie. If I remember correctly.
Zombie at that point?
Yeah. Cause White Zombie, I would have probably dealt with that, but Rob Zombie solo, I just wasn't having. And I'm pretty sure that was the tour, if I remember, the last one that I recall at least.
Yeah, and it's funny because like at the time I had no idea that there's probably like this like legit New York connection between the two groups from back in the day.
Exactly. Yeah.
But now I get it. Now I get it.
Yeah, of course.
Also, I want to talk about the Suicide Commandos.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of an unheralded band.
Again, a group I know I've never gotten massively into, so this is going to be your heavy lifting more than mine. Fill me in on your context of the interview.
Really? Here. You've never heard their records?
No, I'm familiar with them by name, certainly. I don't know offhand of records I've gotten into of theirs or like anything I have a vivid memory of that I could really pontificate about. But I'm trying to look up something here to see if something will spur my mind.
they started like way earlier. They started in like 74, but with 78 they put out a record, make a record, which is kind of this really cool. It's got like, it definitely has like a rock. I think it was at the time described as an R&B kind of influence to it, but it is punk.
Okay.
It's really kind of like fast and driving. They put out two really great singles. And then, yeah, like it looks like they did a record with Frank Black.
What am I seeing? I'm just looking it up here. What's the, oh, wow. Yeah. In 2013. Weird.
Yeah.
On our friend's label. Songs for Slim. I wonder what. Yeah, I'm not familiar with this. It's just a 7-inch. Okay.
Oh, well, it's like a limited single. I want to check this out, though. Like, I wonder if there's songs on this Discog. Right,
no. Yeah. But no, I never got into these records. I'm looking it up. You know what it is? I'm confusing. I don't know this band at all.
Oh yeah, Moby's thing.
So no, I don't. Yeah, Moby's thing, which I. Area. But yeah, I don't know these records. I gotta check this out. Do you? I'm assuming you own at least one of these original singles or LPs, probably.
I own the two singles and the first LP. Whoa, this 7-inch was limited to 100.
That New West one from 2013?
Yeah.
It's never been sold on the marketplace.
No.
Sold
on eBay, I guess?
Thing. Maybe. Or it says sold on it. Yeah, weird.
Yeah. How this came
together. It says all proceeds went to the Slim Dunlap Fund.
Yeah.
And it was songsforslim.com. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because we have a friend who is on this, on the label New West, but I don't know anything about this thing.
But they are kind of like a really cool band that, really, you know, the first single 76, right? So they're right out of the gate, same time as everything's going down.
Yeah, you want me to trace you why that makes sense, though, as well, really quickly?
Why does that make sense?
Not the Frank Black. Well, okay, so you're doing the Suicide Commandos putting a thing that label.
Yeah.
Why that makes sense is because that the dude from Twin Tone went to that label. And that's the connection. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Because, yeah, they were ultimately on Twin Tone Records. After being on Blank Records. Blank Records, I think, like, I'm trying to remember the story. There's, like, some weird story where, like, it was bought from the Misfits, the name, and Blank Records put out the Perubu first LP and put out the Suicide Commandos record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did just the two records, Modern Dance and the Suicide Commandos. Which is kind of like a good run for a label.
Yeah, two off.
Yep. It was a Mercury Records subsidiary, apparently.
Yeah, that's funny. Like, it's apparently the Polygram. So it looks like I wonder when that got gobbled up.
Because
like that was out of the gate that they were a subsidiary right away, or that got bought up later when obviously Suicide Commandos. I don't know how much they made it commercially, but. Perubu did a bit. Maybe that's where that comes from.
No, I think, I don't know, Cliff Bernstein, who is the manager of Metallica and Red Hot Chili Peppers, ran this label. But he only did two records, but definitely two amazing records.
Well, yeah, commendable. I like they the idea that's two.
The Bizarros, but their album was released on Mercury when Blank was folded, it says, according to this Discogs entry. Which would make great, like, wow, they picked like one of the foundational Cleveland bands, one of the foundational Minnesota bands, Minneapolis bands, and one of the foundational, I guess, another kind of Cleveland band. I guess we're Akron with the Bizarros.
That one, I don't know. I don't know enough about the Bizarros, but I'm not shocked that you do.
Bizarros are fucking awesome, Chris. Dude, you got to check out the Bizarros. Those
another one I will track down.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I guess we should move on to the next episode, or anything else you want to dive into this?
Sure. I'm just going to look it over really quick. Part of my my trouble with this one is that I'm a bit foggy because these came out a month or so ago or whatever. And so I can't remember some of the nuance. I apologize for listeners that I'm maybe not contributing my as much as I should be with some of these, but I'm trying.
It's okay. Don't worry, buddy. Don't worry. And we're going to wrap it soon because we're going to have to save some for another Greatest Hits episode. I do want to point out to everyone, though, that right now on Discogs, you can find that the Bizarro's first single for unbelievably cheap. So if you're looking for a good record to pick up cheap, that's a good find right now.
Nice.
Let's move on to the next episode. What is the next one?
Next one is Corey McCallum.
Five Knuckle Chuckle.
Yep. Damien's favorites.
Corey McCallum. Yeah, no, I was really stoked to get to finally do this. Of course, Five Knuckle Chuckle, a band from Orangeville, Ontario, hugely influential to people like me. Josh from Fucked Up, I know, was a big fan. I know Mike from Fucked Up's a big fan. Sandy was a huge fan. Everyone in Fucked Up. I don't know, maybe not Jonah as much, but that's because Jonah was more into like Dropkick Murphys type punk. And I think Jonah was more into Jersey.
Oh, that's funny. I would never have picked him for a Jersey guy.
Excuse me. Jonah was into ska.
I get that, but I wouldn't have picked him for that over, like, you know, the sort of metally influenced things.
No, he was definitely not, like, more like a skate punk dude. He was into, like, ska punk stuff for a minute.
Gotcha.
And then he was into, like, hardcore. Well, he's into, like, Dropkick Murphys big time for a while. Remember, he had the jacket.
I'm not touching this because this is you airing out your bandmates.
I'm not airing out anything. I'm just bringing up history, you know.
Fair enough.
Let's dive into this episode. So yeah, hugely influential band for my band, obviously. A bunch of people from this area. Were you a fan of them at all, Chris, growing up?
No, but not that I had an issue. I just never really, they didn't really jump to me for whatever reason. I don't know why. I knew them by name. I probably heard a song or two in passing. I don't really remember. Like, even when they're talking, because if I remember correctly, you guys even speak about them doing like a music video, right?
Yeah, they did a video on Much Music.
Which, again, in Canada, like for you know, international listeners, there was a time in on Much Music anyway, where in Canada here, which is our MTV or whatever, where we did, like, they would push certain, like, cause we have these Canadian content rules and laws or whatever. And so you would see, you know, independent things getting pushed. And I guess this is one of those bands, but it's funny cause I don't remember that video or, I don't remember a lot about this band other than the name, probably seeing some records and maybe hearing a song or two, but it's funny because I like, you know, I knew of Rock Energy. I knew of like some of that stuff, but I never, this is one that never, I don't know, didn't go across the lake, so to speak. Although I shouldn't say that because I would probably bet there are at least a handful of people in my neck of the woods that probably loved this band and still do. So I'm just speaking for myself, I suppose.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, it was very, there was something that was very local and very regional at the time, you know, like, and they might have been very just Toronto area, like, you know, and like not as you say, they didn't go west with their popularity as much as like maybe they were an eastern area band.
It could be, yeah.
Which is definitely,
I'm just trying to think, even like I've sent you, there was I believe I think I sent it to you. We have in like a sort of a group chat thing for the show. And I sent Damien a flyer, I don't know, probably 4 months ago or something, when I was at a venue, one of the venues here in the nearby area. And I can't remember who they were opening for. Do you remember that flyer sent?
Oh, yeah, it was who were they opening?
Because the joke is that Damien always is, it's Damien's favorite band, and that Damien, it, obviously it's not, but you love them.
I do
love them. You do love them, and that's great. But I, one of the Daves always sort of teases that it's, you know, it was talked about band or something from Damien. So I sent because I saw like that had flyers up at the St. Hollywood, and I can't remember what the gig was.
It's like someone coming up. It's like 80 Fingers Louie or something, right?
Yeah, there was a bunch, but it was very funny because, like, of all the times I've ever really discussed this band or even heard them, it's been with you, and then I've seen their name or whatever. But in recent times, I've seen it more. It's like you've imparted this on the world, and now it's like its ripple effect is being felt. You're responsible for this band, you know, coming out of the obscurity back to like a being a thing. I feel.
Well, no, all I can do is play my part in imparting the gift of their music that they've given us. And let everyone else pick up the pieces after that. But because like I do feel that I've helped spread the word a little bit, but like they're the band that have kind of, I don't know. I think for that era, like they're one of the best bands of that style for me. And it's amazing that how much I kind of still find myself being able to go back and listen to all that all these years later.
Yeah. I can do that. I think it's also like a bit refreshing because I don't feel that there's a lot that's entirely like that at the moment. I know there are things, but not things that I tend to gravitate towards. So if I'm listening to anything of that sort of spectrum, I tend to be, you know, something from that era rather than maybe a new band of that whatever style. But yeah, this is one. The things I really liked that he was talking about in this interview specifically was the idea of like, not separating like the idea of getting into something like I'm trying to think of the bands, like obviously Bad Brains is mentioned, but he talks a lot about, I believe if I remember correctly, SNFU and like basically getting into essentially hardcore without kind of realizing that, you know, the sort of like the differentiation, if you will, like them being from an era where when they got into these things it was just like whatever they kind of stumbled across and it was cool, that was fine. There wasn't any like specific need to put it in a little like box and not like one over the other or what have you. And I think that is accurate to my also semi-rural Southern Ontario upbringing. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, no, that I think for me, it was, I came about in the era just before you had to compartmentalize everything in a way.
Yeah.
Or at least before I was privy to the fact that you had to do that. You know, I didn't realize that was like what you were supposed to do till a little bit later on. So yeah, you got to experience a lot more of it, but it's funny cause like he was the first person I met where I'm like, oh, are you going to go see DOA? I think it was DOA. And he's like, I don't like punk. I like hardcore. And, I'm like, oh, okay. And it was, that for me was like a real, like, oh, there's a difference? Like, oh, okay. You know. All right. I get it now.
I absolutely love stories like that in hindsight, any of that kind of stuff, because I just find it really funny. I don't even know if he meant it to be like, you know, I think he was, from what I gather, you saying this, is he wasn't trying to like, you know, like belittle what you're saying. He was just like, no, it's not my thing. Which to me, it's sort of all a part of the same thing. Yeah. I like when it's like young people making a very firm stance of that, like there's a line in the sand and one thing is this and one thing is that. And you like, I don't do this thing. I just find that funny. But I also do get it. You know what I mean? Like I get what he meant saying that and like hearing you say it in the era, I definitely can see. I feel like I knew people like that too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know I'm sure mean? Like, I was even like saying something equally as ridiculous at times in my life too. So, you know, no judgment, but also at the same time,
no.
That was a huge moment for me too.
Yeah, but do you think it was a huge moment because it made you delve deeper and therefore informed what your tastes became? Is that what you mean, or is it a huge moment to realize that the punk scene is so divided or whatever?
I think it was both. I think like it definitely at first showed me that like this is this weird oh, they're different. Okay, now I get it. But then it, you know, ultimately, you know, it made me want to see why they were connected. You know, and if you look at it, you know, oh, DOA was the titular first hardcore band.
Yeah.
So they're the one that kind of like, you know, can lay claim to the term.
At least. But wasn't he also saying, though, like in that context, if I'm not mistaken, he's saying that, because what was the comment was, I'm not into punk, I'm into hardcore, right? That's the remark?
No. Yeah.
So it was that DOA is punk, I'm into hardcore. That was the idea behind it?
Yeah.
Which is funny because exactly like the in historical hindsight, it's sort of backward.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But, you know, but as like, you know, also at that point, who was he to know, right? Like it's
hardcore. Yeah, for sure. And like, and that issued. No, exactly. I didn't know of that record then. 100% did not know of that record.
Yeah, nor did
I. And so the era, because I actually had another conversation, like not the exact language, but I talked at length with a friend of ours on the weekend, and Dagle Abortions and DOA and what was the other one? One of these other sort of like, you know, monumental Canadians came up, and we were talking to some of our American pals, and we were trying to like contextualize the idea that to some of these people that didn't grow up in this like, mind you, DOA are from out west, but actually both bands are from out west, I guess technically, but your ability to see these groups in the early 90s was fairly easy for someone like you and I, and so, but it was such a different thing than what the original, I don't know, thing was. I shouldn't say DOA is actually kind of, you know, never really, you know, as far as like they do their thing, you know, like their trajectory has never really changed. I would say Deglo did, but
yeah.
But anyway, my point is, in this era, him identifying DOA as not, you know, sort of part of, I remember that era. And it not being a concern to kind of go see them, sadly, at that age, when I was at that age, I didn't understand the sort of weight of what, you know, they represent and how, you know, what the early records were like, even things like that. Whereas, you know, then you know, that era, you're dealing with things that are more current as a young person that were more interesting or something. Like I didn't put DOA in the minor threat category in my head as a young person, whereas it should have been if I had the historical, you know, wherewithal. But I don't know if I summed that properly for you, but that's what I remember.
Has to go away to get appreciated properly. You know, like you almost like have to have the band stop and then you can like sit there and look and take it all into, you know, mind and put it all into proper context. And then you can appreciate the band. Cause yeah, like DOA is minor threat, you know, they're more important arguably to, you know, the grand scheme of music than minor threat is, you know, like they're like the band that taught Black Flag how to tour, you know, they're the titular first hardcore band, but like, you know, they were never, and I was the same way. I didn't like appreciate them until much later when it was like, kind of, you know, where now I'm kind of like looking at it going like, oh shit, like they did, like, yeah, Husker Du, like, yeah, like all these bands, like, yeah, that was them and then some. Like they were there before them and after them.
Yeah, agreed. And I think you summarized it perfectly though, where like the you need to go away to be more properly appreciated. Because I think that's the DOA thing, is that they've always trudged on. And so I think that eventually to people it becomes, and people like myself even guilty of this at times, it becomes like it's taken for granted. Mm-hmm. So there isn't like that historical weight or like being romantic of what it would have been like, or, you know, just the idea, like this fantasy of seeing these like groups that are going to blow your socks off that you have no access to ever seeing, especially in a certain era. They were always accessible. And I think that weirdly enough, that was a part of, at least a part of not allowing me to see them properly initially. And so yeah, I slept on, you know, that era of DOA big time. And I mean, I think they were even playing this weekend or last weekend, like in our area. Like they never stopped. Like they, like, I can't even imagine how many shows they played. Like, can you even imagine the number? Like it must be enormous.
It must be insane. Yeah, like they were like they've never stopped.
Yeah, like it is wild. And it is such a, I don't know how much they extensively tour the US still. Like I'm guessing they do, but it's Canada. I mean, it seems like you can see them all. And yeah, that's kind of insane when I think about what it's like to like function as a band, let alone an independent band.
Yeah.
You know, and be that active touring is, wow, it's wild.
They just played Sherbrooke. Like yesterday.
That's right. Last night or something. Yeah. But I think they were here like last weekend. I feel like they were here
during Not Dead Yet.
Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But anyway,
get Joey Keithley on the podcast during that.
Oh, well, you'll get him. You'll get him. I have faith.
I will. One day. One day. Chris, I think we should call it a day for today.
Yeah, sure.
And then we can record more of this next time. But I want to put this episode up. So everyone, I apologize for once again this taking for so long, but I hope you enjoyed this mega mix of footnotes and anything you want to say, Chris?
No, I'm good. I guess sorry that we couldn't do it sooner for anybody who's been, thirsting for our conversations that, people enjoy. So yeah, I wish we could have coordinated, and hopefully it'll be, well, not hopefully, I feel it will be, I don't know. It's more up to Damien not being away, I guess, than me, but not to throw it all on your shoulders, Dame. That's but
okay. I'll take it.
Yeah. But yeah, with good reason. What I'm trying to say is it hasn't been not on our minds. Like it hasn't been ignored is what I mean to say.
That's a good way of putting it. No, definitely. I miss doing it. I miss getting to talk to you, buddy. And I'm glad we got to do it. And we'll be back on track now. I'm going away a couple more times, but nothing very long. And so hopefully we'll be able to figure that all out. But that's it. Next week we'll talk more about Dave Crist and all Roger Murray and you know, a lot, everything else.
Yep, as always.
All right, Chris, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good.
How do people get in touch with us?
TurnToThePunkFootnotes@gmail.com. And with what we just said, that'll be more active when we're in the swing of things. But yeah, anytime you want to contact us, we're always looking at stuff and we appreciate it.
Yeah, and send any emails you want to the email address that's found at DamienAbraham.com. You can also hit up me on various forms of social media at Left for Damien, and find us on Facebook, Turn It a Punk on Facebook, run by Tristan Abraham, show producer. And the guy that's really been hustling, trying to make sure that I keep this show on track. So thank you very much, Tristan. And thank you very much to good people at Youngblood. And, of course, friend of the show, Dave Martin, and his amazing records that he's put out, with the manufacturing records, recordings, because they have put out some incredible records recently. They've got, like, a lot of labels. Like Captured Tracks is like a little empire.
Yeah. Dave's great. One of the Daves.
Yep. One of the Daves. We've got to have a Dave super show soon one day where we get all the Daves back.
For sure.
All right, Chris. And that's it. I guess we'll see you all next week. Thank you everyone for listening. This week, George from Propagandhi's on the show. So check out that episode.